Welcome, everyone, to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is installation, configuration, and basic tests of WebSphere MQ Advanced Message Security 7.5 in Linux. The presenter today is Angel Rivera. Angel is a member of the WebSphere MQ support team for Unix and Windows platforms. He has experience with the JMS client of WebSphere MQ and WebSphere Application Server. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Angel.
Thank you, Kathy. Hello, MQ fans. I work with MQ Level 2 support team for Unix in the Research Triangle Park in North Carolina, USA. I hope that you're having a great day. Thank you very much for taking the time from your busy schedule to attend this conference call or to listen to the recording of the presentation. The platform Linux was used in order to provide you with actual commands for navigating the directory structures and working with the files that are needed for this feature. However, the actual MQ commands and the overall principles apply to other platforms, Windows, AIX, HPUX, and Solaris. The main motivation for preparing this presentation is to provide practical steps for addressing common questions that we see in problem tickets or PMRs. The scope and audience for this presentation is for beginners. Let's begin. Let's go to next page, please. Slide 2, agenda. I will start by introducing the product MQ, Advanced Message Security, or AMS for short, and its benefits. Then the steps for installing, configuring, and performing a basic test will be discussed. And finally, there will be an exploration for a scenario that shows how AMS works and how it protects the information. Now let's go to page 3, please. Tutorial Tech Talk. This presentation is based on the following Tutorial Tech Talk, which provides more detailed written explanation and a complete output of the commands. This Tech Talk will contain all the interactions between with a command line and also all the different outputs. For the sake of simplicity and to keep this presentation short, I'm including just excerpts from the outputs of some of the commands. Then if you're curious to see what really all the output looks like, then please, you can download this technical document. Next page, please. Slide 4. What is MQ AMS? Okay. Let's begin with an overview of the product. IBM WebSphere MQ Advanced Message Security, or just AMS, is a separately licensed component of MQ that provides a high level of protection for sensitive data flowing through the MQ network. It protects the data not only as it flows across the network, but also when it is stored in a queue, and verifies that a sender of message data is authorized to place signed messages on a queue and that a receiver is authorized to get messages. We'll explore these with more details. One thing that I want just to highlight is the following. Without this product, the AMS, without this feature of MQ, you can use encryption mechanisms to transmit data from the client application to the queue manager, and then from the queue manager to the client application or between two queue managers. However, when the message that is encrypted arrives to the queue manager, the data is unencrypted and is stored in plain text. Then, the protection that AMS provides is that the data is encrypted while it is stored in NQ. That's a big difference. And that's really the selling point for this feature of Advanced Message Security. There are some minor other features, but this is the main one. And we'll explore that in more detail. Let's go to page 5, please. this is just additional benefits and it's just more marketing material and we can skip it. Let's go to page 6, please. Okay. This presentation is really for people who are new to AMS. However, if you have used AMS before, this slide is of interest. Prior to 7.5, there was a separate product that was installed on top of MQ. It required, you needed to install MQ 7.0, for example. Then you will download separately the AMS 7.0 code and install on top of MQ and then do some configuration and so on, some integration. The same thing was with 7.1 of MQ. Now, with 7.5, the AMS components were incorporated into MQ. Now you do a single installation, and you have AMS already incorporated. You just need to do some configuration and testing. That's what we are going to cover in this presentation. Okay? For example, again, in version 7, it was a separate product. You needed to explicitly configure and enable interceptors. The interceptors are they are still there in MQ 7.5, but they are already included. You don't have to explicitly configure them. The idea is that there will be some portions of the code that when you are dealing with protected queues will say, oh, you are using, let me check if AMS has some protection policies. Yes, they are. Then they will, those protection policies will be enforced. It's a very small overhead of those interceptors, okay? And also, in the standalone version, you require the use of a command to configure. Let's go to the bottom of the slide, and in 7.5, it is integrated. Still, you have to buy a separate license, but it's already enabled. The interceptors are already configured, and you do not have to use that configure MQS command. Let's go to the next page, please. Page 7, additional changes is that in AMS 7.0, you have a different information center separate from MQ. Now, you have the same thing with the MQ 7.5 information center, which, by the way, is being phased out. And in this slide, I'm including what is called the knowledge center, which is the next generation of the information center. And by the way, MQ version 8 has been recently GA'd. It's now general available. And it has the same things for AMS. Nothing has changed from the AMS point of view if you want to use MQ version 8. Let's go to this is slide number 8, please. Okay. I think that the best way to explain the product and to see the benefit is to start right away with some scenarios. Let's do the following basic scenario. AMS is not included in this scenario. It's just very basic. And then we can try to see what possible problems could be for some people and then how we can solve those problems. Okay? Now, the first scenario is very basic. The default behavior is for MQ not to use encryption. Okay, then when you transmit data from your clients to the queue manager or between queue managers, the data is not encrypted by default. Okay, and the messages that are stored in the queue are not encrypted. Again, and the summary is the messages are sent in plain text, the messages are stored in plain text. What does it mean? It means that if somebody is doing, it has a network sniffer, and is monitoring the activity between an MQ client and the MQ queue manager, that person might be able to see the plain text of the payload when messages are transmitted back and forth. And also, if somebody has access to the physical disk where the queue manager data resides, that person can, knowing exactly which files to look for, could take a look at the plain text messages. Okay? And for some people, that's not a problem. For other people, that's a problem. Okay, let's go to page number 9, please. Okay, let's illustrate that with a diagram. In the center, we have the MQ queue manager. And then on the left and right, we have client applications. Let's start with the left. the Lyft application is just very simple. It's doing a put. And it's just five characters, hello. And the application is in plain text, and it's going to transmit that in plain text to the queue manager. The transmission wires will have the hello inside them, in plain text. When the queue manager that is in the center receives that message, it will store in a queue, and the message will have in plain text, hello, okay? And then in the right side, we see an application is doing an MQ get, and the contents of the message is transferring plain text, hello, into the application, and the application displays that to the user or does whatever else needs to be done, okay? Again, everything is in plain text. Let's go to the next page, please. Page number 10. Okay, it's scenario number 2. Let's do an encryption during the put and get. Okay? Let's protect the payload of the message during the transmission between the MQ client applications and the MQ queue manager. The protection in this case is by encrypting the content using Secure Sockets Layer, or SSL, which is a standard in the industry. Now, the messages will be stored in plain text in the queue, okay? We are trying to do incremental steps between the scenarios, and in scenario one, everything was in plain text. Here, we are just adding encryption to the transmission. The messages are still stored in plain text, okay? Let's go to the next page, please. Page 11. Okay. The message, let's go again from the left side. There is the NQ client application is putting a message with the plain text that says hello. The message is transmitted in an encrypted manner from the client to the queue manager. That is, if someone is tapping the transmission, will not be able to read the encrypted text, but instead could be something like arroba gato dollar por ciento, click. Something unintelligible, okay? The message is received by the queue manager and is stored in the queue in plain text. This means that the administrator or anyone with access to the queue can use an MQ get to browse the message and see the contents in plain text. This also means that anyone who has access to the files controlled by the queue manager can locate the file and see the contents of the message in plain text. On the right, there is the MQ client application that is reading the message from the queue. The transmission of the message is encrypted, arroba gato dollar por ciento. By the way, that is kind of what the Bushman people in Kalahari Desert in South of Africa use in the language. And the other text that I use, arroba gato dollar por ciento, are just the Spanish version of the characters that we're seeing. Sorry, I just needed to show off a little bit. Well, let's continue. The message that is received and unencrypted, and the plain text is hello. Let's go to the next page, please. Okay, but there is a problem here. Okay, for some teams, the fact that the user root or the user MQM, which is the MQ administrator, can read the contents of the queue is an issue. For example, maybe it's not an issue if you have a small department and everything is controlled by your department. But what happens if you are just using the services in a large computer, and that large computer is maintained by a third-party vendor, okay? And you have confidentiality agreements with your clients, but not necessarily with every single member of that third-party vendor who is administering the queues and so on. Then you don't want those people to read the confidential messages. Then that could be a scenario for the AMS product. Okay. Now, in this presentation, there are two queues for comparison. Queue 1, which is a normal, not controlled by AMS, and the other will be test.queue, which will be controlled by AMS, and the contents will be encrypted, and only selected users can access it. Okay? That's very important, too. Let's go to next page, please. Page 13. In some cases, sometimes I want to provide some additional text, and I wanted to use this particular format, notes. In many cases, in these notes, I'm going to explain more details. In some cases, I will just tell you to look at the notes, and I may skip most of the contents of the slide. But in this case, I'm going to cover them. I know that the font is smaller, but again, I wanted to put more information there, and that's the reason also I didn't want to put some excerpts. I didn't want to include every single line. Most of them will not be relevant to our discussion, and then you have to use a little bit of your imagination to think, okay, this is just, if you try to compare what you get when you actually do the experiment and doing this, you will notice that only selected lines are shown in this presentation. However, in the technical document that I mentioned in page 3, there is all the output is there. Okay. In this, what we have in this case is we have a user called Alice that puts a message into the queue, and the user called Bob retrieves the message. Okay, let's start with user Alice, puts the message into the queue, and he's doing the MQS put, the name of the queue, Q1, and then the name of the queue manager, which in this case is QM Verify AMS. By the way, this is the queue manager name that is mentioned in the online documentation. Okay, then the sample is called MQS put, which puts a message into the queue. It is using bindings mode, but okay, that's not really relevant to the discussion. What is important is that you can put a message. And this application doesn't care if the data is going to be transmitted in encrypted or in plain text. It doesn't care if AMS is used to protect whatever. It doesn't care, the application, okay? This is a nice advantage. You don't have to modify your applications. Okay, then the message that we are going to, that Alice is going to put is the text, this is a test, okay? 4 words, simple, plain text. And Alice ends the application, the message is put into the queue. Now, let's think of the message arrives to the queue. Now, the user MQM, which is an MQ administrator, can browse the contents of the queue and see the message in plain text. Then one way to do it is using the MQ sample called browse, MQS BCG for browse. I don't know why that G is for, but anyway. And is getting messages in a non-destructive way. It means they are going to be browsed, but the messages will remain in the queue. In this case, this utility will show the message descriptor, message ID, message name, etc., things that are not relevant for the discussion. The important thing is at the bottom, we'll see a section called message, that the length is 14 bytes, and the text is in plain text. We can read it. It's human readable. This is a test, okay, in the right side of the slide. Let's go to the next page, please, page 14. Okay. And also, and this is a little bit maybe more than, maybe it was not that obvious for some people, the user NQM has access to the physical files for the queue, and therefore that person can bypass the MQ commands and use operating system commands to see the inside the queue. This could be also the same for root, for the user root, okay? Then we have to go to the directories where those files are located. In this case, it's under var MQM, queue manager, the name of the queue manager, and the directory called queues, okay? We do an ls minus ls is a Unix utility that will display the directory listing. The minus l is used to list the file permissions and ownership, and then the name of the queue. And we see that the size of the queue is the number in the middle, 2560, anyway. And we use a Unix command called cat for concatenation. And that is a very simple utility that displays the contents of a text file. In this case, on purpose, I'm adding this plus begin output to indicate that the following is the output. And then at the end, at the bottom of the slide, I put plus end output. Again, I have to remove some of the data that was not relevant in order to fit it in something and not to have extremely tiny, tiny, tiny font. I wanted you to be able to read what is going on in the slide. Anyway, at the bottom, just before the plus end output, in the second line from the bottom, you were able to see more or less at the end, this is a test, and I put it in bold and underline it, okay? The message itself, again, it has a message descriptor that is in binary, and MQ knows how to read it, etc., etc. But it has also a section for the payload, the contents of the message. And in this case, this is a test, which is a string, and it's in plain text. Okay? Let's go to page number 15, please. Okay. Now, we have covered two scenarios. We are increasing the complexity. And in this third scenario, well, what is the thing that is left to encrypt? Well, it is to encrypt the actual messages in the queue. Then everything that we want to do has to be encrypted. And that's where AMS comes into play. Okay, AMS will be used to encrypt the data in the queue. So let's go to the next page, please, 16. And in this case, you can see the application on the left side is putting the message in plain text. It is transmitted in encrypted form. The queue, this is the difference with respect to a scenario two. The queue, the contents of the queue is encrypted. The queue itself is not encrypted, okay? The messages inside the queue are encrypted, okay? And when the messages are read, are also transmitted in an encrypted form, and the getting application on the right side will be able to decipher it and put it back in plain text. Let's go to page 17, please. Okay. Now, we are claiming that not even root and MQ admins can read the queue. Mm-hmm. And that's what we are going to explore in the next couple of slides. We are telling you that AMS is controlling the queues and it's encrypting the data. And what happens is that MQ administrator is trying to use MQ commands to get access to the queue. Well, there are some objects, administrative objects in the AMS that we'll define later on to say, hey, in queue, only certain users are allowed to read and put into the messages in the queue. Not even the MQ administrator, unless there is an explicit access, will be able to read or put messages. And that even the MQ administrator, working locally, will still get a 2035 reason code error, which means MQRC not authorized. Okay. And then we say, okay, the MQ administrator can say, well, MQ commands are not allowing me to do this. Let me go and see the encrypted messages. We know how where to find the files. Well, they can read, they can display the contents of the files, but the messages are encrypted. That user will not be able to, even accessing directly the file, will not be able to decipher what it is inside the message. The messages are encrypted. Let's go to page 18, please. Okay, now let me show you, let's do the following. User Alice puts a message into a different queue. Remember, the original queue we try is called Q1, okay? And this one is called test.queue. This is protected by AMS. Then Alice is allowed to put the text message. It's called, this is a test. And then the MQM user ID is trying to read it, and is issuing the browse command, and he's saying, hey, reason 2035, which, by the way, if you get a similar reason, again, this presentation is for beginners, and I'm trying to give you some commands or explanation of things that intermediate or advanced users may already know. If you see a reason code, you can use the MQ utility that is shipped with the product. It's called MQRC. And then you provide the number, 2035, because you say, what is this 2035? And you may not have time to go into the knowledge center this time, and so on. And then by this saying MQRC space 2035, you will see the output, MQRC not authorized. Okay. By the way, the thing in the middle is in hexadecimal, but at least it gives you an idea, not authorized. Okay. You have an idea with that. Page 19, please. Okay. Now, let's go and try to look at what it looks like with the physical file. And what we do is we change the directory to the location where the files are located. We do an ls-l command on everything that in those queues. And we see that there are two entries. The Q1, it is our queue that is not protected by EMS. Look at the size. The first number there is 25660, okay? This is, even though there were 14 bytes only in the actual payload, still the other characters are based on the message descriptor and so on, the envelope that NQ uses. Now, notice that in the second queue, the file size is 4096. It's larger, and it still has only 14 bytes of the actual data. This is a test. However, it's encrypted, and it has additional information. That's the reason, even though they have the same logical content, the physical content is different because the second queue is encrypted and has, messages are encrypted and has more information. Okay? Now, notice also something here. Again, this is for novice users. The name that is shown in the file, it is not test.q. It is test exclamation point q. And you may see, wow, if you don't know this detail, you may think that maybe there was a typo or something. No, this is on purpose. And the reason is because for multi-platform support, for iSeries and the ZOS, it's necessary to do the mapping of the dot versus the exclamation point. Okay, let's go to the next page, please, page 20. Now let's go, we are the NQM administrator, and we are able to locate the file that we know that there is an encrypted message, and we use that command called cat. And what we see is that we see now that everything here is kind of, encrypted. And even if you are trying to look for this is a test, like in the previous slide, in the previous example, we cannot see it. Then this is a proof that things are encrypted, that not even by looking at the physical files can you see it. This is a benefit of AMS. Let's go to page 21, please. Okay. That was the last slide for the introduction. Now we'll proceed with the installation and configuration tasks. Because this scenario describes the tasks done by five different users on the same machine, we have seen several PMRs in which people try to use a single command prompt to do all these different tasks from the different users. Very easily, those people get confused. Really easy. Now, we could create one command window for each one of the different users, and that would be fine. We'll be using five windows. But in this scenario, I tried to do a compromise, and we'll be using three windows. The first window that we'll call window one will be for users root or MQM or Fulano. By the way, Fulano is the Spanish word for John Doe. That's equivalent for a generic person, okay? And in Windows number 2 will be only for user Alice. Then if we say Windows 2, and I will also illustrate that in the slides, is for Alice. Windows number 3 will be Bob. By doing that separation of Windows really helps and to avoid confusion. Okay, let's go to page number 22. Okay, now the installation. Window 1, you have to log in as user root to install the MQ file set. Only root can install those file sets. MQM cannot do it, okay? And the instructions can be found in the Knowledge Center or can be found in this free red book that has an overview on the installation steps. Page 23, please. Specifically, this is page 23, the installation of the file set. From that red book, specifically see the section here, 16.1, page 232, and the following names of the AMS packages on Unix and Linux are used for AIX, XP2S, and Linux and Solaris, okay? And let's go to page 24. Could we go back to just 23 for a second, please? Sorry. Thank you. An important note that, sorry, I didn't mention it here, but I wrote it in a note separately. And in NQ 7.5 and 8, in addition of purchasing a license for the queue manager, you need to purchase additional license to use AMS. There are two more things that if you want to use them, you have to purchase additional license. One is called the managed file transfer, and the other is telemetry. And the reason I mention this is because some customers routinely install all the components. They see the list of all the file sets, and they install all of them. And then accidentally, they are installing AMS, or managed file transfer, or telemetry, and these customers may not have those additional licenses, and therefore, if they do an audit, they may fail the audit of what is purchased versus what they have actually installed. Then, if you are not buying licenses for these additional products, then my suggestion is be careful during installation and exclude those items from the list. In that way, you install only for the things that you have purchased. Let's go to page number 24, please. Okay, now let's back into the track. We'll create a queue manager for testing. It's called QM Verify AMS, the same thing as the Knowledge Center. And we have to log in as in window number one. This is a case in which, okay, we have done all the things that we need to do as root. Now let's go back to this NQM, which is the NQ administrator. We'll use the command CRTMQM for create a queue manager, minus U, DLQ, and then the name of the queue manager. And I need to explain a couple of things. The minus U flag indicates which queue is going to be the dead letter queue. It is a best practice to always define such a queue. Otherwise, messages that cannot be delivered will be discarded if they are non-persistent or will cause problems with channels and applications if they are persistent. Therefore, it's always a good suggestion to have a system, a dead letter queue. Now, and why you could have used the system.dead.letter.queue, okay? It is available to you. However, when people are using NQ Explorer, many of the users that we have seen interacting with the product, they click on the icon to hide everything that begins with system. Therefore, if they are hiding those icons, they will be hiding also the system dead letter queue, and they may not notice if undeliverable messages have been placed into that queue. Therefore, having a different queue name, such as DLQ, could help them to spot faster. Oh, there is a message that was not delivered and is in the dead letter queue. Let me take a look and see what happened. Okay? Let's go to page number 25, please. Okay. Once we created the queue manager, we start the queue manager. The second item is let's configure the queue manager. There is an NQ utility called runNQSC. And then there is no prompt. You say, what's happening here? Well, what happens is the prompt is just there waiting for you to enter commands. And we call these commands NQSC types of commands. And I'm using on purpose the pound sign to indicate a comment, like a define testing queue to be protected by AMS. Okay, and we use the command define space queue local because it will be a local queue, and the name is test.queue. And we define a second queue which will not be protected by AMS, which is define queue local Q1. Next page, please. Page 26. Now, it's a good idea if you are going to communicate with clients in different hosts to define a listener for NQ. One best practice that we have seen with some customers is that they define a listener and they include in the name the port number. In this case, the default port number is 1414, but in this case, in my test scenario, I have to use 1414 was already used, then I use 1444, and I define a listener called listener.1444, and with that define listener command. And one important thing is that attribute called control queue manager, which means that when the queue manager starts, it will start the listener. When the queue manager ends, it will end the listener, which is very nice. You don't have to worry about the listener. Really nice. Now, the definition of the listener will not start it because we define the listener this time, then we have to manually say start the listener. But after that, Again, when the queue manager starts, it will start the listener. When the queue manager stops, it will stop the listener. Okay. Now, assuming that we are going to work with MQ Explorer, let's define a channel for the called System Admin Server Con. And we define the DLQ, the dead letter Q, and define Q local. And we are using an attribute called like system dead letter Q. What we mean is there are certain attributes in the system dead letter Q that we want to take into consideration when this new Q is created. Okay, and the following ones are needed for 7.1, 7.5, and 8. By definition, when you create a queue manager in these versions of MQ, the queue manager will reject attempts from MQ administrators to access the queue manager remotely. Then, in case you decide that, okay, it's safe for you to access queue manager or something, then you can add these two lines in order to the MQ administrator to be able to use MQ Explorer to remotely connect to the queue manager. Let's go to page 27, please. Okay, and these are just miscellaneous things that now that we are using running QSE. There is an attribute called SPLCAP, which shows if AMS is enabled. Basically, if you install the AMS code, this SPLCAP command attribute will be enabled. If you uninstall the file set for AMS, it will be disabled. That's it. You cannot just turn it on purpose. What I mean, you cannot do the alter command. You have to go outside the queue manager, uninstall AMS in order to disable these things. But we don't deal with this anymore. I mean, not anymore. We don't deal with this attribute. There are some things in the code that will check for the attribute, but we as administrators or users, we don't care. Now, there are two queues that are important. Again, we don't have to really know too much about the details. It's just that this will be used by AMS. The first one is called System Protection Error Queue, and it's used in the occasion that you try to put a message that doesn't conform with one of the policies, and an error will be shown there. Besides, an error will be shown in the MQ Queue Manager error log, okay? Now, the second queue is called System Protection Policy Queue, and this is where the AMS policies will be stored, and we'll talk more about them. Let's go to page 28, please. Okay, let's go back to window number one, and let's log in again as root. Oh, by the way, I lied to you. I thought that we already did things with all these activities for root, and that was not the case. Sorry. Root has to create user IDs, okay, for this exercise. And we'll create three user IDs. Alice, which will have access to put messages, Bob, that will read messages, and the user Fulano, which will not have any access for AMS, okay? It is, and why we created? Because we want to show you what happens when unauthorized people try to look at the messages, okay? And all these users will be members of the group NQ users. And the root admin will have to create that user ID, that group ID called NQ users in the Unix box. Let's go to page 29, please. Now, let's authorize users for normal MQ access. Okay. I'm reusing, again, Window 1, and this time from root, we'll change to the MQ administrator. And what we need to do is, okay, starting with 7.1, before 7.1, you could have only one version of MQ installed in the system. If you were using version 6 or version 7.0, only one version. That's it. You couldn't install another one. Now, starting with 7.1, you are able to have multiple installations of MQ. And you can designate one of them to be primary, or you cannot have a primary, and every time you log in, you have to specify which is the environment that you want to use. You want to use MQ 7.1 or 7.5. For example, in my Windows machine, I have four. I have 7.0, 7.1, 7.5, and 8. And anyway, then for me, well, I'm used to always issue a command called setmqenv in order to specify which installation I want to try. In this particular test machine, which is a different machine, I have to use an installation one, and I have to use a command. However, it's important here. When you use the setNQM, it does some things with environment variables. Therefore, you have to do something very geeky in Unix that is called a sourcing of a script file. This is a script. Then you have to type dot space the full path name like optnqm bin setNQM, and then the rest of the commands. If you don't do the dot, then what happens is the environment variables will not be properly set in your environment. Unix will fork a process, create those environment variables there. Those variables will be lost when the process returns back to the normal session. I mean, it's very geeky. Then just forget about that and always do dot space setNQM, okay? Now, once we establish our which is the version of NQ that we want to use, now let's authorize users to connect to the queue manager, and the following will be just for a normal non-AMS activity, okay? We do setNQ out, and we say that we want, for the queue manager, we want users Alice, Bob, and Fulano to be able to connect, to be able to inquire attributes, and to display those attributes. Let's go to page 30, please. Okay, now that we have the authority to connect to the queue manager, let's establish that Alice and Fulano can do a put of messages, and they can browse them and display them. And we want user Bob to get messages, okay, and then get, browse, and display. Let's go to the next page, please, page 31. Okay, up to now, it's kind of business as usual. Now, in this slide, we see something that is particular to AMS. What we want to do is for Bob and Alice to be able to use the AMS queues that were mentioned before. Then we have to give them the proper authorities to work with the System Protection Policy queue and the System Protection Error queue. As you can see, I didn't add user Fulano there. Let's go to next page, please, page 32. Okay. Let's do some tests. But at this moment, we have not done anything with test.queue. Test.queue is a normal queue in this moment. It's not yet under AMS control. It will be, but not at this time. Again, I want you to see some of the differences. Now, we'll open another window. It's now window number 2, and log in as user Alice, and we select to work with the 7.5 environment, set NQM, as I explained before, and we'll put a message, okay? And we'll do MQS put, the name of the queue, and then verify AMS. We do test and the application. Let's go to page 33, please. Okay. Again, remember, test.queue at this moment, it is not under AMS control. Okay. Then we open another window, number 3, dedicated exclusively for Bob. We set up the environment for 7.5, and we do MQS get, the name of the queue and the name of the queue manager. The sample starts, and this sample will wait 30 seconds to see if a new message arrives. If there is already a message, it will display right away and then wait 30 seconds. After that, it will just terminate automatically, and it will say no more messages. But in this case, it found one message, displays the content, and no more messages. And it ends. Let's go to page 34, please. Okay. The next few slides have terminology and concepts related to SSL, the technology that is used to encrypt messages. You do not need to be an expert on SSL in order to perform the tasks mentioned in this presentation, okay? It is like driving a car. You don't need to understand how the internal combustion engine works. You just drive the car. In this case, you just issue the commands that invoke the SSL functions. It is beyond the scope of this presentation to give you all the tutorial about SSL, okay? And the wording here might confuse some of you. Just please bear with me if you are novice to SSL. Just keep on. I'll try to explain things more later on, okay? First, we have to encrypt the message and to encrypt the message, the AMS interceptors require the public key of the sending user, in this case of Alice, okay? Thus, the key database of user identities mapped to public and private keys must be created. We'll do that. We'll explain that. Third item is, in this scenario, we'll be using self-signed certificates, which can be created without using a certificate authority. This is the easiest way to do a test, but for production and dealing with external entities, might not be sufficient. Again, this is just enough for our test. And number four, for production systems, again, it's advisable not to use the self-signed certificates and use instead something from a certificate authority. Let's go to page... Not yet. Let's just stay in page 34. Okay. One more thing about SSL. We say that SSL is used to encrypt messages. However, there is another thing that SSL does for us. It will ascertain the credentials of the users that will put and get messages. And we need to establish ways to identify these users to avoid impersonations. Okay? Let's go to page 35, please. Okay. We'll create what's called a key database for Alice, and we go to window number two with Alice. And the UMask is a concept in Unix, and I will not explain it too well, okay, very well. Okay, it is just used when new files are created. And in this case, the UMask is 0022. If you don't specify a parameter. Why? Sometimes if you are using very restrictive UMask, you may fail in the steps that are mentioned in this presentation. If you're failing because files are created with extremely restrictive authorities, you may want to go back and modify the UMask, okay? 99% of the time, people use this type of UMask, 0022 or 022, okay? Anyway, we'll create a new database. And first, we need to create a directory, and using the nkdir command, we're using the -p flag, which is a very nice one. In case that you have multiple directories, -p will create the intermediate directories in case they are not created. That saves you, if you have, for example, a directory structure of 5 levels and you have only the first 2, well, the -p will create the intermediate 3 levels, okay, the ones that are needed. Anyway. The last command at the bottom is the important one. This is an NQ command that under the covers will invoke SSL commands, okay? Basically, we are going to create something called alicekey.kdb, and we'll have a password, okay? And let me give you a simpler idea in case you are not familiar with SSL, this is an idea. I hope that you have a smartphone or maybe somebody that you know has a smartphone. If you have a smartphone, then there will be an application called Contacts or Address Book or something like that. And you can store the names and phone numbers of the people with whom you interact. Well, the key database is the equivalent of that Contacts application from your smartphone. And we will talk later on. This particular command at the bottom is how to create that contacts database in case you don't have it. That's it. Use a contacts database. In this moment, it's empty, but at least the database with the structure and all that stuff is there, but it's empty. Let's go to page 36, please. Okay. Now, we create some directories, and by running that command at the bottom of the previous slide, some files are created. The important thing is that we have the proper permissions. Sometimes if the UMask is not properly created, these directories and files will not allow you to operate very well, and you may have some very subtle problems. Let's go to page 37. Okay, now that we have the database, the contents database, which at this time is empty, we need to create what's called a self-signed certificate. And notice that the label is called Alice_cert. That is important for this. And then we have a parameter called -dn, which is called distinguished name, and it has some attributes that if you want to know more about the cell, you will need to customize, but we need to know about that. What we are basically saying is, hey, I am printing a badge with some information about me. Okay, in this case, Alice is printing a badge, and the badge will read Alice_cert, and it will have certain information. That printed badge will be stored in the contacts information, and is highlighted here, and we notice that the size of that file, alicekey.kdb, was increased. It means that there is something else there. The database contains now one certificate, one contact information. Let's go to page 38, please. Okay. Now, we have to do the same thing for user Bob. We go to a different window. In Bob, we create the key database. Bob needs to have his own contact information. He creates that database. Let's go to the next page, please. Page 39. And again, Bob has to print its own certificate, and the label is called Bob_cert. Let's go to page 40, please. Okay. Now, what we have here is the following. You must point now to the interceptors of NQs. Of the AMS interceptors required to know where are the databases and the certificates. They will need to do some cross-reference and checking, and therefore they will need to use something called keystore.conf file, which is information in plain text. And each user must have a separate file, and this step should be done for both Alice and Bob. Let's go to next page, please, page 41. The content is just very simple. There are two lines. One is the full directory, the full name. However, when you put the file in the path of the key store file, do not provide an extension. In this case, for example, Alice key should not have the .kdb at the end. And the second line, CMS certificate, is, for example, Alice_cert. And let's go to the next page to see the actual examples. This will be the location of the key store file for Alice, and the contents is that name and with the Alice cert. And let's go to page 43, please. Similarly for Bob, the certificate label is Bob cert. Let's go to page 44. Okay, sharing certificates. Okay. It is necessary to share certificates between the two key databases so that each user can successfully identify each other. Because in this scenario, the users are located in the same host, the directory /temp will be used as a neutral directory to exchange the certificates between the users. But if they are located in different boxes, then you will need to use FTP and specify the file transfer to be ASCII, not binary. Okay. Until this point, both users have created their own contact database, KeyStore, and they have their self-signed certificate. But let's imagine this scenario. The user Alice sends a text message via smartphone to user Bob. User Bob has a new contact database, and the only entry is for him, the self-signed certificate. Thus, when the text message arrives from Alice, the smartphone will say just the phone number, but it will not say that the name Alice. Well, user Bob would like to see Alice added to his contacts. In that way, when Alice sends him another text or calls him, the sender or caller will be indicated as Alice instead of the phone number. Okay? Now, in order to do this, Bob will ask Alice to send him her contact information, which will include what is called a public key, which we'll explain a little bit more in a second. Then user Bob, upon receiving the contact information from Alice, will add it to his contacts. Then Bob contents will have now two entries, his self-signed certificate and the contact information from Alice, which will have something called a public key. Now, I recently did this with a coworker, and he sent me via text message a file with a suffix of VCF with his contact information. I just double-click on that file, and voila! All the information was now in my contact database. That was very handy. In reciprocity, user Bob will generate his contact information, send it to Alice, and Alice will add Bob's information into her contact database. In that way, when Bob contacts Alice, Alice will see in her smartphone that, oh, the call is coming from Bob, okay? Then that is scenario with the smartphones. Really, that's what happens with the next slides, okay? Let's go to the next pages, page 45. Alice will have to export the certificate in a format called ASCII, which is the default, by using that command. And we'll have... This will be a separate file, and that separate file we have to be able to be read by others. And let's go to the next page. And now, page 46, this is Bob, who Alice says to Bob, hey, Bob, I put my certificate, my contact information in this directory in the temp. Then Bob goes into, uses another command, says, oh, I need to add that contact information from that temp directory file into my contact information, okay? And after doing that, notice that the BobKey database has increased, and they are actually now two contacts, again, Bob's information and Alice's information. That's what is going on in with these steps. Let's go to page 47, please. Similarly, Bob will export the certificate, put into the temporary directory. Let's go to page 48, please. Alice will add the information about Bob into her contact information, and we'll continue to page 49. Okay. At this moment, what we have is we have configured everything related to SSL. Now we have to configure AMS proper. Okay, we'll use a command called setnqspl, and we have to use a policy name that has to be the queue name. Let's go to the next page, please, page 50. And this is an example of a policy. Oh, this is done by the MQ administrator. That is the resources window one. This is not done by Alice. This is not done by Bob. Okay, this is an example of a policy defined for test.queue, and what it means is the following. The command that is shown below is the name of the queue is test.queue, and the messages are going to be signed using the SHA-1 algorithm, see the flag minus S. The payload will be encrypted using the 256-bit AES algorithm, see the flag minus E. The sender is going to be user Alice, and the receiver is going to be user Bob. Okay? Let's go to the next page, 51. And we'll issue the command call DSPMQSPL, and just to see what are the policies, and we'll see one policy, which is here, and it has all that information that we mentioned before. Okay? Then let's go to the next page, please, page 52. Okay, this is a best policy, best practice. Previous to 7.1, you have to use a support pack called MS03, also called Safe Queue Manager, if you wanted to have a backup of the administrative objects, the definitions of the administrative objects, like the key definition of a queue and so on. The idea is that maybe you could copy the output of that utility into a text file, and then put into another into as a backup. Or if you wanted to create a queue manager similar to this one, would just rename, use running QSE and feed the data from that backup file, and you will have the same objects that were defined in the other one. In 7.1, we introduced a new utility called dump MQ config, which is similar to save a queue manager, okay? And will allow you to export the administrative objects. You can also export the authorities. However, this utility does not export the AMS policies. Then if you want to really have the complete a backup of all the administrative objects from the queue manager, and if you are using AMS, you have to take an extra step. Let's go to page 53. In this case, you are going to use the DSPNQSPL command, and with a dash minus export, and redirect it to a file. And this file will contain exactly the command that we had before, except that you will see that there is a flag at the end called minus T for toleration mode equals zero. And that's explained in the info center. Let's go to page 54, please. Just 5 more minutes here for the lecture. Okay, 54. Okay. Now, we have finished with all the stuff that we have done, all the configuration. We have defined the users. We have defined SSL stuff. We defined the policies for AMS. We made a backup of those policies. We are ready. What we do is we go as user Alice, and we do an NQS put on that queue, and we type this is a test. Okay? Again, this queue is protected by AMS now. In the earliest example, it was not protected. Now it is protected. Let's go to page 55, please. And then let's go as user Bob. We are able to get the message. This is a test. Wow. Conclusion. User Alice was able to put a message, and Bob was able to read it. Yes, yes. Let's go to page 56. Wait a minute. How do I know that the previous example actually involved encrypting messages? Maybe it all was hocus pocus and nothing really changed. Maybe I just tricked you. Maybe Alice and Bob were using an unprotected queue, you know? How do I prove to you that things were really encrypted? Okay? Well, we'll do some tests and we'll verify. Okay? Let's go to the next page, please. Okay. One way to prove it is to say, okay, we'll create an alias queue. The policy that we created was with a queue called test.queue. Well, we'll create a queue called test.alias, which is an alias that points to test.queue. Because there is no policy related to that, it will not be unencrypted. I mean, the commands will not use the AMS interceptors. Therefore, the message, as it is stored in the database, is going to be shown. Then let's do the following. We'll put another message as Alice, and that's the command at the bottom. And we'll go to the next page, please, page 58. And user Bob is able to browse the test alias. This is the alias. Okay, and we are showing here the message descriptor in plain text. Okay, looks fine. Let's go to page 59. Page 59, and the drum is rolling. Ram! Wow! What's going on here? Well, this is the encrypted data. There was no policy for test alias. Therefore, it was not unencrypted. Okay, it's shown plainly. But the user, Bob, was authorized to get the message. Okay? At least I can show you from one perspective that it is encrypted. Let's go to page 60, please. Okay. Now, in order to really show more of the power of AMS, remember that earlier on we created a user called Fulano, John Doe, okay? And this user has just the basic authority, but was not mentioned in the AMS policies. Therefore, when Fulano is trying to use the queue that is protected with AMS, because there are no policies, that user will fail. Let's go to the next page, please. Let's see the interaction. Okay. In this case, Fulano is trying to put a message, okay? But it will say the reason code 2035. Remember, 2035 is not authorized. This user, Fulano, is trying to browse the protected queue. Again, the error code is 2035. That's good, okay? We wanted only Alice to put messages, Bob to read messages, and nothing else. Then Fulano cannot do anything. Let's go to page 62, please. And let's take a look at what happens when such attempt is made. We can go to the error logs of the queue manager, and we'll go to the bottom of the one of the error logs, and we see error MQ9602. The MQ security policy interceptor could not read the key story configuration file for Fulano. Okay. Then the explanation is that the interceptor couldn't find Fulano key store, and indeed, we didn't do anything for Fulano key store. And there was no configuration done for SSL and AMS in order to work with Fulano. Okay. Then let's go to page 63, please. Now, let's remember that when the user NQ, the NQM user, which is an NQ administrator, can take a look at the physical files, or the root user can take a look at the physical files, then if we do a cat to see the text of the file for the queue, we notice again that we cannot see something called this is a test. I mean, everything else is encrypted. Let's go to page 64. Okay. Now, only one AMS policy has been created in this test. Alice was explicitly indicated as a signer, as a person who can put a message, and UserBot was explicitly indicated as a reader. Then let's explore the scenario which is not covered by the above policy. User Bob tries to put a message as a signer, and user Alice tries to read it. We do not have explicit authority for that. Therefore, there will be a different type of error message. It's called 2063 security error. Let's go to the next page, please. Okay, in this page 65, user Bob is trying to put a message, and user Alice is trying to get the message, and they get 2063. And there is an error log, a message in the error log that is AMQ9017 that has several possibilities. And if you can go to the bottom, it's in red, the receiver is not among the recipients of the message. This is the case for our test, okay? Let's go to page 66, please. Okay, two more slides. Okay, this is another test. This is a kind of a strange scenario. There is no policy in place for user Bob to browse the encrypted messages that are generated by himself. Then in this case, we want Bob to put a message and then Bob to try to read it. He cannot read it. It will have security error. Let's go to page 67. Okay. And we'll see that there is a different type of error message in the error log. It says message signer is not in the list of authorized signers. Okay. That's the reason Bob cannot put a message into the queue. And, okay, that's the end of the technical slides. Now I would like to pass the control back to Kathy for additional information and then for questions and answers. Thank you.
Thank you, Angel, for a great presentation. Okay, on slide 68 is a list of additional WebSphere product resources that you will find useful. The very first link there is a link to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange webcast. Moving on to the question and answer session.
And our first question comes from Becky Rick Watson. Your line is now open.
Hi, Angel. Thank you for the presentation.
Thanks.
I'm wondering about the SSL and the Servicon channel. Is that a requirement for the NQ AMS to encrypt the messages on the queue and the persistent logs?
Well, the SSL is required, and if the messages are non-persistent, they will not be stored in the recovery logs.
Well, in the first Alice and Bob JMS example and the website, SSL was not included in the example.
Yes.
Yeah. So,
the reason I started just very simple at that moment was just to show that the users had the proper authority to interact with the queue, just at the NQ level without AMS. They were able to put a message and get a message without SSL, any encryption, or anything like that. I wanted to start very simple, and then I wanted to start building up the complexity by adding SSL and then by adding AMS and so on.
Well, maybe I should rephrase it. Is it true that the messages will be encrypted if you do not use SSL on the channel? I mean, encrypted in the queue if you do not use SSL on the channel. Is that true?
Well, In this particular case, on purpose I chose the – yes, I'm going to answer your question, but I wanted to use what is called the MQS put commands, where bindings mode, okay,
uh-huh.
And not necessarily the clients mode. But, yes, if you are – you don't need to use SSL in the channel, but it is something that you can do. What is important with the AMS is that the messages will be encrypted in the queue, and only specific users can put and get messages from that protected queue.
Uh-huh. Okay.
If you're using a client channel, you do not have to use SSL. But it makes sense to use SSL if you want to have the complete protection in both in either transmitting the data both transmitting the data and storing the data in encrypted form.
Right. I just want to separate that out because it would be a separate change phase for our organization. So,
yes.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. There are several that are in the web conference. The first one comes from Michelle. Will you install this product as root or MQM?
In order to install anything related to MQ, you must be root. The MQM will not have the enough authority to put files into system directories. For example, /opt is a system directory. Only root should be able to install files there. Now, the creation of the queue manager and the administration of the AMS features, that's the scope of the MQ administrator.
The next question comes from Ranjit. If AMS is configured by root users to give access to any particular user to browse a queue, then what is stopping root users to provide itself the access to the queue which is protected by AMS?
Very good question, and similar to the MQ administrator. The user's root and the MQ administrator can physically see the contents of the files for the queues, and they could physically also create policies and so on for them to look at the information. However, they will need to have access to the certificates and the public key from Alice. Then, as you saw in the examples that we show, Alice and Bob needed to do some things with the certificates. And in this particular example, I wanted to keep it simple. All the players are in the same host. But ideally, the queue manager will be in host number one, user Alice will be in host number two, user Bob will be in host number three. Then in host number one, that has the queue manager and the files and all the data, the root user will not be able to see Alice in host number two or Bob in host number three if they are in different locations. Now, if that root user has access to all the hosts, yes, you're giving too much power to that single user, and that person could impersonate and defeat some of the policies and the features that we have. However, if you do a compartment of the different hosts and you have a different root in number one, host number one, different root user in number two, and different root in number three, and if they are different people, different teams, then you will not be those people will not be able to impersonate the other ones without the private key, which is the important thing. And they could take a look at the physical files, but the contents of the messages will be encrypted, and those root users will not be able to unencrypt it.
We will go to Kishore in the web conference. It's actually a very long question, so I'll repeat it. Which one is affecting to make enabled Alice and Bob to put /get messages using AMS? When we run set MQSPL, we are not specifying the users Bob/Alice. In that case, how is the AMS policy applying to Bob and Alice? Also, how MQM is not allowing to get put these messages as the policy is created using MQM only. If the keys on policies are allowing this, just by copying these certs, MQM root directory will make MQM to put get messages.
Yes, there are several questions here, and let me try to address each one. Regarding the command setmqspl, yes, we are not specifying the actual names. What is very important, there are two pieces. One is called the distinguished name, which is part of the SSL certificate. And that's really the key. It has to be exactly as in the certificate. Then that's how the users are identified, not necessarily by the usernames in given with MQ, but by the certificate from the AMS interceptor point of view and the policy. Now, the other one, I think I have addressed it. In order to keep it simple for this presentation, I wanted to have everything in a single host, but by having everybody, all the eggs in the same basket, in a sense, yes, it's possible to for root and MQM administrator to copy certificates and to impersonate the users. Again, in a real situation in which you really want to protect, you will separate and have different compartments. You will have different hosts for the users and the queue managers and so on. In that way, the MQ administrator will not have access to the private keys from the others. The administrator will have access to the public keys, but not to the private keys. And that's really important. And probably maybe another presentation having channels with SSL and having multiple hosts and so on addressed to intermediate and advanced customers could be a possibility to have a follow-on to cover these types of situations. Again, the scope of this presentation was really just basic to give you an idea of the power of these features of AMS.
The next question is from Sarah. So you still need to install a GS kit to create KeyDB, etc., right?
Yes. The answer is yes. With MQ 7.5, we are including also the file sets for SSL, and they need to be installed too. But the installation of AMS will determine, hey, you are not the SSL file sets are not installed. Either you have to install it at the same time or you have to install it prior to installing AMS. Then if you are installing MQ for the first time and if you want to have AMS, you have to select also the features is called the file set for the JS kit and the SSL.
From Roshan, will AMS encrypt the message in a cluster queue?
Yes. You have to be finding the policy.
One more came in from Sarah on the web conference. In the case of SVRCONN, CHIS, keystore.conf is in remote node?
Yes. Sarah, yes. What I would like to do is, if you can send me an email, my user ID is shown in the cover page, then I will be able to reply with more details to you.
No questions at this time.
So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Angel, for presenting today. Everyone have a great day.
Thank you.
Thank you.